Hello, this is Wendy Bauer. I'm returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 1st, 2015. We will continue now with the death notices, starting with John F. Clark, Jr. from Kenny. John F. Clark, Jr., 88, of Kenny, Illinois, passed away at 9:31 a.m., on May 29, 2015, at Manor Court in Clinton, Illinois. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Tuesday, June 2, 2015, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, with Ernie Harvey Jr. officiating. Burial will follow in Pleasant Valley Cemetery. Clark will be buried with military honors. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Memorials may be directed to the AMVETS or to the Kenny Christian Church. Robert O. Daggett from Maroa. Robert O. Daggett, 88, of Maroa, Illinois, passed away 4:45 p.m. May 27, 2015 at his family residence in Maroa, Illinois. Services will be 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, June 3rd, 2015 at the Maroa United Methodist Church with Pastor Nick Showalter officiating. Visitation will be 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Cremation rites will follow the service. Calvert Funeral Home in Maroa is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the Land of Lincoln Honor Flight or the DMH Heart and Lung Institute or the Maroa United Methodist Church. Mashari Halbrook, 28, of Decatur, was called home to be with the Lord at 1:10 a.m. on Monday, May 25th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Mashari was born May 2nd, 1987. He leaves his parents, his son, and many friends who he loved dearly. Services celebrating his life will be held at 12 noon on Wednesday, June 3rd, 2015, at the Main Street Church of the Living God, 2000 North Main Street, with visitation from 11 to 12 noon. Burial will be at the Greenwood Cemetery, and service is entrusted to Walker's Funeral Service. Jerry Lee Long. Jerry Lee Long, 73, of Sun City, Arizona, passed away on Sunday, May 24, 2015. Jerry was born in Decatur, Illinois. He was preceded in death by his parents, John Floyd and Anna Mae Long. There will be no services. Jerry's final resting place will be the National Memorial Cemetery of Arizona. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to Hospice of Arizona, 19820 North 7th Avenue, number 130, Phoenix, Arizona, 85027. John E. Osman from Macon. John E. Osman, 67, of Macon, Illinois, passed away on Thursday, May 28th, at Memorial Medical Center, Springfield, Illinois. A service to celebrate and honor John's life will be held at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, June 3, 2015, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Macon. Visitation will be from 4 o'clock p.m. until the service time. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, June 4th, at Drummer Township Cemetery, Gibson City, Illinois. Memorials can be made to UCP of Decatur. And now from the sports page, an article written by Mark Tupper, Herald and Review Executive Sports Editor, titled Sparked Back to Life. Picture captioned Ohio's Ty Black throws to first for a double play after getting Illinois' Red Roper out at second during the regional tournament game in Champaign, Illinois on Friday. From Champaign. Needing to get its offense revved up after a punchless four-game visit to the Big Ten tournament, Illinois called on two big sticks and one very big wind Friday night. A wind-aided three-run homer by David Kurian and a solo bomb by Reed Roper ignited Illinois' biggest offensive output in 2 weeks, en route to a 10-3 victory over Ohio in the NCAA regional tournament. Roper's homer came in the first, and Carrion's highlighted a 5-run second that knocked Ohio starter Jake Miller from the game. After a 10-minute rain delay in the third inning, the wind died, and with it probably vanished Ohio's best chance at a comeback. Without a howling wind, the ball stopped flying in the thick evening air, and Illini starter and winner Kevin Duchesne was able to fearlessly throw strikes. Despite having what Illini manager Dan Hartley thought was one of his worst starts of the season, Duchesne battled the distance, allowing 7 hits during his 114-pitch performance. As a result of the victory, Illinois will meet Notre Dame at 7 p.m. today in a winner's bracket game of this double elimination tournament. Notre Dame advanced with a 13-7 victory over Wright State. Wright State and Ohio drop in the loser's bracket and face each other later today. This article was written on May 30th, 2015. An article from today entitled "Kreps Could Be Next Maroa Coach." Written by Justin Kahn, Herald and Review staff writer. The Maroa Forsyth School Board could vote on a recommendation from the administration for a new boys basketball coach at the Monday, June 8th meeting. Maroa Athletic Director Josh Justice wouldn't say who the administration is recommending. An H&R source said former Maroa star Robo Kreps was the name the board will vote on. Kreps wouldn't confirm that. "I've been in contact with Justice, but the way things are going with the school board, I don't know," said Kreps, who recently returned from his honeymoon in Aruba. "I don't know what's going to happen. I think my chances are good, but we'll see." The Maroa school board turned down the administration's first recommendation, Jerseyville coach Stoat Reeder, brother of Sullivan coach Chet Reeder. Justice said he was frustrated with the board's recent actions. "I would hope so," Justice said, of whether or not the board will vote on a recommendation. "I have zero confidence in our school board right now. This is 2 months too late, if you ask me." Chad Kluver had coached the Trojans the previous 16 seasons with a 269-186 record, with a state title in 2007 and third place finish in 2006. Kluver resigned in March and last month took a job at Watseka. And now from the business section, written by Rachel Rogers, H&R staff writer. Volunteers do their part to beautify downtown. And there's a picture of a number of volunteers planting flowers during the Beautify Decatur Coalition planting event. Deployed with more than 1,000 plants, 8 teams of volunteers worked Thursday to bring some color and sustainability to the planters downtown. The Business Beautification Task Force of the Beautify Decatur Coalition organized its third annual Downtown Planters Project, filling about 60 concrete containers with a variety of flowers, grasses, and shrubs. Perennials served as a new addition to the project this year after the coalition was awarded a $5,000 sustainability grant from the Macon County Environmental Management Department. With the grant, which is administered by the Community Foundation of Macon County, volunteers were able to install drought-resistant boxwood shrubs and coral bells. "We want to be environmentally sound, and the perennials will also hopefully bring some color to downtown during the winter when it's drab and gray," Task Force co-chairwoman Jill Davis said. From the Arts and Entertainment section, article entitled "Art Council's Summer Exhibit Features Neighboring Cultures." An article written by Donette Becker, a staff writer for the Herald and Review. Once a year, the Decatur Arts Council presents their International Arts Experience, highlighting a different culture, both its past and present. This year, the summer exhibit will celebrate the lifestyles of Chile and Argentina in the exhibit titled Chile and Argentina, Neighboring Cultures. This has been a very interesting project and what I've metaphorically called an archaeological dig, said Sue Powell, gallery director for the Decatur Arts Council, because there are not a bunch of Chilean and Argentine natives living in this area. The exhibit will open with food, crafts, and performances from both countries during the first Friday walk. The event will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, June 5th, throughout the Ann Lloyd Gallery and the Madden Arts Center at 125 North Water Street. Visitors will experience the lifestyles of the cultures through various forms of art, as well as artifacts and textiles. From the editorial page, an editorial titled Stalemate Wastes Taxpayer Dollars. The political game of chicken between Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and the General Assembly's Democratic leadership is costing Illinois taxpayers, present and future, a lot of money. That's a fact often forgotten as House Speaker Michael Madigan, Senate President John Cullerton, and Rauner rattle off press releases but accomplish little. The General Assembly, controlled by Democrats that created this budget mess, are expected to finish up work by today, approving a state budget that is at least $3 billion out of balance. For the second year in a row, Democrats have approved a spending plan with no way to pay for it. While the majority of the blame falls to the Democrats, Rauner deserves a share. He initiated the working groups that met in private, keeping discussions away from many of the people who voted him into office to change Springfield. This isn't a game. There's a real cost associated with this dysfunctional system, and taxpayers end up with the bill. Some of those costs are easy to identify. It's inevitable that the General Assembly will now have to be called into special session, which costs taxpayers about $50,000 per day. There's also a cost to delaying approval of a state budget. Some necessary projects will be delayed, as well as some potential cost savings. It may be hard to pin down the actual costs of inaction, but it's real, and taxpayers will foot the bill. The state's inaction also has some impact on local cities, counties, and school districts, which are unsure of how much state money they will receive. Those costs are minor compared to what the state may have to pay if its unfunded pension liability of $111 billion isn't addressed. The rating companies, which in essence set the interest rate for the state when it borrows money, have already issued warnings that the state's rating may fall further if the pension and budget issues aren't addressed. The ratings are also near junk bond status. That means every time the state borrows money, the interest rate is higher. There's also a cost of missed opportunities. We will never know how many companies have decided not to locate or expand in Illinois because of uncertainty about state government. Democrats should be ashamed for approving a budget that is so far out of balance. It's disturbing that once again Democrats have chosen to approve a budget that is out of balance, failing to comply to the state's constitution. It's even more disturbing that Illinois taxpayers, now and in the future, will be paying for the ineffectiveness of our leaders. Also from the opinion pages, a blog from the Herald and Review, from Kurt Erickson, the Herald and Review Springfield Bureau Chief. State work could come to standstill. Until now, Governor Bruce Rauner's battles have been mostly waged within the marble corridors of the Illinois State House. But as lawmakers worked last week to finish up their work in the spring legislative session, warning signs began popping up that the governor's efforts to shake up Springfield could soon spread to every corner of the land of Lincoln. Last week, Rich Miller, author of the political blog Capital Facts, obtained an administration memo titled Contingency Preparation Assessment. It asks state agencies 10 questions about what they'll need to do in case of a labor strike. Among the questions is which of the major services performed by that agency will be discontinued and how many temporary workers will be needed if there is a walkout by members of the state's unionized workforce. The state's contract with its largest public employees union, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 31, expires June 30th, when the state's fiscal year ends. In more than four decades, there has never been a strike. But this year is different. Rauner has taken a stridently anti-union posture since taking office in January. He has called for the formation of local right-to-work zones, which would allow communities to market themselves as being more friendly to business because of the absence of unions. He wants changes to prevailing wage laws on local government and school construction projects, which labor unions say will result in massive cuts in wages for highly skilled trades workers. Earlier this month, the governor said change is hard and predicted talks would be tough. But, he said, I want everybody who works in government to have a great career. I want them to be well compensated. I want them to have a great retirement. But we need a system that's affordable and also incentives. Incentives that everybody has to save taxpayer money because the tax burden on our citizens is too high already. He has also said it could take government shutdown to get the changes he thinks are needed to turn Illinois' fortunes around. Thus far, Rauner has had no luck convincing Democrats who control the General Assembly to join him in his reshaping of state government. The legislative session was a washout for Rauner's turnaround agenda. Democrats also are skeptical of the administration's claim that he doesn't want a strike. I don't think you can convince me you don't want a strike, State Rep. John Bradley, Democrat of Marion, told a Rauner lawyer during a hearing last week. The chief negotiator in the contract talks on behalf of the governor is Joe Hartzler, a former U.S. attorney who led the prosecution of Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh. He's a no-nonsense guy who is charged with trying to convince the union to make some major concessions, including a wage freeze, changes in overtime, seniority, and higher health insurance payments. Just as Rauner is preparing for a strike, AFSCME is concerned about a lockout. One of the governor's heroes is Ronald Reagan, who famously locked out the nation's air traffic controllers to bust the union. As the spring session was rolling to an end last week, AFSCME was working to convince the House and Senate to approve legislation that would bar them from striking or being locked out. If a strike or lockout occurs, you won't see prison guards and state police involved. They can't strike for obvious reasons. But there still could be thousands of state workers on the picket line in the heat of the summer. State government is already messed up. A strike or lockout of the 38,000 AFSCME workers would mean major upheaval at facilities. Facilities that treat the mentally ill and developmentally disabled. It could mean public health workers wouldn't be around to fight infectious disease breakouts. Imagine what it would be like for a temporary employee to get hired to run the dispatching operation for the state police. Who will help people sign up for food stamps and unemployment? Could temp workers suddenly be tasked with overseeing orphans and juvenile offenders? So far, the governor's rhetoric has been just that. But come July 1st, it could turn into a reality Illinoisans have not previously witnessed. From the Life and People page of the Herald and Review comes an article written by Emily Steele, a staff writer. Ice Bucket Challenge brings much-needed attention to ALS. A picture heads the article, captioned, Signs Line the Route in Honor of ALS Patients and Their Supporters at the 2014 Walk to Defeat ALS in Springfield. Last year, more than 700 walkers raised $137,000 for local patient programs and research. From Decatur, compared to other diseases, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, is rare. An estimated 30,000 Americans have the crippling neurodegenerative disease, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. But compared to other diseases, there is little understanding about the fatal disease, its progression, medications to treat it, and why only half of people with ALS live more than 3 years after being diagnosed. But May is ALS Awareness Month, and local patients, their families, and supporting agencies hope the wave of fame brought by last year's multi-million dollar viral Ice Bucket Challenge will continue with its signature event. Prior to the challenge, the annual Walk to Defeat ALS was the association's bigger fundraiser. Last year, hundreds of participants and volunteers gathered in Springfield, raising more than $137,000 for area patient care services and research. This year, the association is hoping its unexpected fame from the challenge and the movie about long-term ALS survivor Stephen Hawking, The Theory of Everything, will push that number even higher at its June 13th walk. There's definitely increased awareness with the Ice Bucket Challenge, and we hope that translates to the walk, said Maureen Barber Hill, president of the St. Louis Regional Chapter. This will be Decatur resident Jan Matthews' first ALS walk after her father, Roger Schmitz, died from ALS in October 2013 at the age of 78. ALS is a heartbreaking experience for everyone who is touched by it, and you can't control the outcome, but you have a choice in terms of what to do with the experience, Matthews said. She and her sisters, Joy Schmitz and Joni Sabin, will reunite as the 3J's team. The name pays homage to their father's childhood nickname for his daughters. Matthew is looking forward to the walk and a chance to help. You connect with the families, meet others who are dealing with the disease, Matthew said. Maybe the money I raise means a family has access to medical equipment. One of the first donations to the 3Js came from the only other team in the area led by Mark Kelms. Since 2010, Jane's Angels has raised more than $277,000 for the St. Louis Regional Chapter, making it one of the top teams nationwide, due in part to his employer's donation matching program at ADM. Their goal this year is $80,000. Calm's wife, Jane, was diagnosed with ALS 6 years ago. The disease has left her nearly paralyzed and on a respirator. In February, Calms was appointed to the ALS Association's National Board of Trustees, and this month he traveled to Washington, D.C. for a day of advocacy. He and other exponents appealed to lawmakers for research funding, an ALS database, and drug development laws. So far, it's very rewarding and fulfilling, Calms said. When I go off to Capitol Hill and hear the heart-wrenching stories, to hear how this disease has affected other people, it's gut-wrenching. Yet it shows how the human spirit rises up in the face of adversity. ALS has been in the spotlight since the popular social media video campaign in August required participants to dump ice water over their head and make a donation to ALS. That campaign raised $115 million for the ALS Association. For the first time, really, ALS is getting the notice this kind of disease should get, Calms said. The windfall went toward caregiver grants, nutritional supplements for patients, and home modification grants. Money from the challenge also tripled research funding. For those who can't attend the Springfield Walk, Hill said the agency is encouraging them to participate throughout the day of the walk on social media using the hashtag #ALSWalkSPR. She also said people should keep an eye out for the return of the Ice Bucket Challenge. And now finally, from the Life and People page, Everyday Cheapskate. Slow and steady wins the race. If it were easy to get out of debt, no one would have credit card balances, student debt, or personal loans. No one would be in debt. It's not easy to get out of debt, but it is possible. And if you are using the correct method, possible becomes highly probable. Granted, there are several methods for getting out of debt, but only one that offers you hope of lasting success. I've gone down every road that promises a way out of debt and have discovered that most come to a dead end. Others are filled with impossible twists and turns, but there is a way out. I found it. My husband and I are now completely debt-free, including the mortgage. Done. Free at last. And that is what makes me uniquely qualified to tell you the best way to get out of debt. But first, let's identify the roads you should avoid and the reasons why. Fast and aggressive. This way out of debt is very inviting because it promises a quick and easy shortcut. It goes like this. First, you make sure you have $1,000 in the bank to cover emergencies. But that's all you need, so stop saving. Take every dollar you can squeeze out of your life and send it to your debt. Hurry, fast, and if you pass go and collect $200, send that in too. The rebate check you got in the mail, off it goes. Tax refund, birthday check, you know the routine. Apply it to your debt. But why you should avoid it? This plan makes an assumption that $1,000 will be adequate to cover all of your unexpected emergencies until you are debt-free. But what if they are greater than that? What if they are, say, 6 months of aggressively throwing every nickel you can possibly spare against your credit card, your tires and refrigerator both die at the same time, and just when you are facing other expenses for which you are unprepared? Or what if you lose your job? Stuff happens. Slow and steady. It's not sexy and anything but exciting. There's no instant gratification here, but it's the only way I know that will bring lasting satisfaction and a debt-free lifestyle. First, commit to no more credit purchases. Period. You're done with that. Next, get out all of your non-mortgage debts and look at the minimum payment required this month. Now lock in that payment. Pay the same amount every month until you are out of debt, even if your creditors would accept less. As one debt reaches zero, take its payment and add it to the regular payment of the next debt in line. Keep doing that every month. As it is paid, repeat with the next debt, and on until all are paid in full. Why you should do it? Fast and aggressive is enticing because it promises speed. Slow and steady takes longer, but it is doable, and that is what makes the journey enjoyable. This reasonable, low-risk, get-out-of-debt method has the greatest potential for success because it works. Thousands of people have proven that over the years, including me, your humble columnist. This has been Wendy Bauer with the June 1st, 2015 Decatur Herald and Review. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Thank you.